say something, I'm giving up on you. I'll be the one if you want me to. Anywhere I would have followed you. Say something, I'm giving up for you.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Charlotte View. I'm your presenter Daniel, and I'm here with your host, Claudia Pareko. Every week we feature innovative, wholehearted, and inspiring thought leaders and businesses. Throughout our high-ranked shows, you and your loved ones will experience an influx of eye-opening information, profound inspiration, compassionate counseling, advanced spirituality, pertinent advice, and loving guidance. Just tune in, live or on demand, and share, share, share. Our shows are held on Mondays and Fridays at 12 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time and 9 a.m. Pacific. At any moment, to participate on our shows, please call 805-830-8344 and press 1 to talk with the host. Charlotte View provides the platform to a diverse array of guests, authors, musicians, nonprofits, social workers, psychics, healers, small businesses, retreats, you name it, who are joining forces to change the world from inside out, from their areas of expertise. You have something to say, we have the audience for it. All interviews are easily found in all social media and are available free on demand for anyone who wishes to further their knowledge and to transform their lives. To request a show, please write to info@charlotteview.net or visit our website, charlotteview.net. We are proud to announce that we have recently reached 40,000 live listeners. This is a huge accomplishment for us and a huge milestone. Our shows are sponsored by Spirit Connections with Tina Marie Heckman, Living Enlightened with Life Coach Nina Bingham, Ann Carter Medium, and The Light Retreat in Charlotte. Now, enjoy the episode of the day. Tired of vending and selling with little results? Announcing Vent2 in Charlotte, a live brainstorming and tip-giving kind of night where seminar meets shopping during the highly anticipated weekend of CIAA for business owners in the Queen City. Leslie Wright teams up with marketing professional Audretta Hall and technology guru James Penn to provide a day of learning and shopping. Open to the public February 28th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., guests will enjoy a seminar about how to infuse social media into their events for 2015 while patronizing small businesses. Evaluate, prioritize, and have a clear understanding of your path of money-making strategies in today's economy. Entry fee is only $7 with lunch provided. Tickets are available at eventbrite.com. That's eventbrite.com. Look for Vent2Win Charlotte.
Thank you, Danny, and welcome everyone to Charlotte View. Today we have the topic of the New Year of the Tree by Estelle Spike. Join Charlotte View and Estelle Spike today and see how the New Year of the Tree, the creative tree process, and the heart of winter that we find ourselves in can be an inspiration in a creative tool that can enhance and enrich your life. Estelle Spike has 40 plus years of experience as a seasoned certified international transpersonal therapist, a creative life coach, and she does groups and events leaders and author, and she will share with us just that. Join us today or on demand to share and participate in the creative tree process and learn about the extensive spiritual and personal growth enriching skills of Estelle Spike of Beyond Personal Limits. If you wish to contact Estelle, please email email her at etspike, S-P-I-K-E, at gmail.com, or you can find her at her website, stellspike.yolaside.com. Yola is Y-O-com, so stellspike.yolaside.com. And now, let's join, welcome Estelle to the show and start our interview of the day. Welcome, Estelle.
Hello, Claudia. It's a pleasure to be here and with all our listeners.
So, Estelle, let's start with learning about you. Who is Estelle Spike? So what can you tell us about who you are?
I could tie that into how I discovered the New Year of the Tree, but Estelle Spike, I actually have a memoir. It's not published yet. It's actually a memoir in progress called Dare. I think that said a lot about who I am and how I've chosen to live my life. I'm an American, but I have lived 26 years and worked out of this country in Asia and in Europe. And I guess I was a bit of a risk taker and an explorer. I'm an activist. Got to live in an incredibly innovative time and place of the Bay Area of San Francisco and Berkeley in the late 60s, early 70s, which totally influenced my direction with my work. And I found myself there because of having the opportunity on a dare to go around the world, which made me focus on the West Coast. As we all know, everybody talks about, it must have started in California. I don't know what else you'd like me to say about myself at this time, but yes, I guess I haven't, like Carolyn Miss would say, I've heard a different drum and have kind of picked up my own mattress and taken myself where I needed to be.
Nice. Well, I was talking with some friends about the show today, Estelle, and the first thing they asked me, because I told them that you were a certified international transpersonal therapist, they asked me, what is a transpersonal?
Well, what is transpersonal? Yeah, well, transpersonal actually, of course, started in California, and it was a part of a whole movement that was going on in America, and especially in California, and that was, it was a time of a great social change, the Beatles, a lot of wonderful people were coming from the East and introducing Eastern philosophies, and a lot of change and questioning. An exploration was going on there, and I had the opportunity to be there and very much a part of that whole atmosphere. And consequently, at that time, there was also a change going on within the more liberal or more extreme areas of health, especially within humanistic and social psychology. And these people were quite influenced by Carl Jung, you know, who created Jungian therapy. And in Jung's later life, he was very oriented to dreams, and his dreams started to take on a different focus for him. And he felt it was beyond the restrictions of how we looked at therapy at that time. And he actually created a term called transpersonal, which is kind of trans, is a Latin term for beyond or through the personal. So some of the people like Jean Houston, which some of our older audience might know, was a president of the social psychology for many, many years, a very dynamic woman who's still in Ashland, Oregon, and people know Asheville, North Carolina. It's Ashland, Oregon, has a similar creative cultural focus. And a lecturer and teacher in psychology named Abraham Maslow. These people were very drawn to going beyond what the restrictions were in how we looked at therapy at that time. And so they took on this term, transpersonal, and it was a movement. Now, if you understand sociology, when things change in society, they change first as a movement before they become something more structured and years later maybe become a discipline or an academic structure. So there was this movement happening in the late 60s, early 70s that I was very drawn to, and I can't get into all the interesting synchronistic, as Jung would say, stories of how I was drawn to this community of people that led me in this direction. But it was filled with little synchronistic stories that led me to find these people in the Berkeley and San Francisco area. So I became immersed in this movement, which involved experimentation. So instead of talk therapy, groups became more involved, and then people would put in meditation, and then even body therapies and movement and drama, all these kinds of experimentation on trying to get a more holistic picture. But the word holistic, which became a movement, actually happened later. How to be healthy. Now, I'm going to borrow a term from a man who spoke at a transpersonal international conference in Israel that I spoke at in 1996. And he was a medical doctor and a naturopath. And we were talking about how we look at health. And they said allopathically, people look at health as the absence of disease. But people in this transpersonal, holistic, integrative movement that was happening really look at health as our relationship to everything, how we are involved with ourselves physically, emotionally, mentally, our families, our other relationships, our relationship to the environment, our relationship to everything. And when we're in a and when we look at life that way and health that way, it's a whole different picture. So it's very hard to pin down, because if you put into your computer transpersonal therapy, you will get a million sites. But the actual terminology includes, because now, many years later, it's an academic discipline. There's not that many universities in the United States, but there's universities in England and Hawaii, okay, still part of the United States, and in California and in Colorado that have courses. And there are a periphery of techniques that people can use to work with the person in this holistic, integrative way. You might say, we used to say that transpersonal movement, which became transpersonal therapy, even though it goes beyond just therapy, it goes into the arts, architecture, and everything, is the grandparent of the mind, body, and holistic movement as we might think about it today. And there were a lot of researchers. I will quote from some of those researchers later on because of some of the other questions I had put to you that I thought would be interesting for our audience. But I hope that it's always a bit nebulous. If you came and worked with me, I would not necessarily use the same technique each time. I try to be aware of you in the present and become aware of where you're going in your process. But it is about holistic and integration. I hope that, I'm sure that's a mouthful.
No, no, but, you know, it makes much sense because it's something that today might be part of our normal it was a movement back then, because now I cannot imagine thinking of ourselves without being holistic and without thinking of the body, mind, spirit. And
there's a spiritual level. For some people, we're okay with that term, and it actually it was transpersonal researchers that that term into the DMV, which is a diagnostic medical tool in psychiatry that now incorporates an area of spiritual well-being, and that was due to transpersonal researchers, and also the work in research on the impact of prayer, or what you might call prayer. Somebody else might call it more from a religious standpoint, but it can be prayer or affirmation from a more holistic standpoint. The research done on that were all transpersonal. And this also encompasses what academically is called the consciousness studies field.
And Stel, so you are this transpersonal coach, and I just want to make our listeners that are listening right now, you are in Charlotte. So you are doing a great job here. You're doing some workshops. So people can actually go with you now that you're here in Charlotte. So how do they go about that? Do they contact you directly?
Right now, the things that I'm doing ongoing, I do a lot of group work. I've been doing that for 40 years. It's always evolving. It's always changing. My group now is called Creative Circle Work. And, they can contact me by my phone number, which is 704-535-7395, or my email, as you said, etspike@gmail.com. And then we also have individual work of the kind that I'm talking about. And I also have mentioned that I started about a year ago a new type of individual work called Wisdom Connecting Sessions, and that came about because of a discussion of a colleague of mine that I knew in Portugal who moved back to Charlotte and actually was instrumental, kind of a bridge in bringing me to Charlotte. And she made a comment once about some insight I shared, and she said, you know, it's quite amazing how much wisdom you share with people. And so I thought about that because sometimes people want to just experience something one time, and I felt this would be an interesting way in which doing that, using my whole expertise and allowing a person to have a one-time experience where I would use some of my creative tools and my techniques over the years to help bring out that inner soul wisdom in themselves, and of course, add my own companionable wisdom, which might invite me to be participate more than I would in a normal session. So this kind of work is quite interesting and quite alive because it's something I'm doing recently, and you must understand that. And this was like a question we were going to talk about later, but I use the word creative a lot, and I'm going to explain that. One of my colleagues, when I was a member of the Scientific and Medical Network in England, it's an international organization, is a gentleman named Dr. Larry Dawsey. And Dr. Larry Dawsey was a medical doctor, an internist. He's still alive, but he's getting up there like me. And he was instrumental in the National Institute of Health. If anybody follows what happens in medicine in this country, it has to go through the research of the National Institute of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. And him and Deepak Chopra, which everybody knows that name, even though he's getting up in years now, started the Complementary Medicine Division. Anyway, in one of Larry's books, he has a chapter called Creativity. Now, he wrote this book only a few years ago, but he refers to a conference that happened in 1959 at the University of Michigan, in which they invited some of the greatest minds and thinkers around the world to come and do a think tank on what was creativity. And they talked for a week, had fun and everything, and one of the simplest terms that came up to describe creativity was the ability to see and respond. Now, that might sound quite simple, but you have to be present to do that. And most of the time, we're not. Most of the time, we are involved in expectations and assumptions, and we're not present. So if something happens, we often react, not respond. So creativity, over my 40-some years of work, and of course my adventurous lifestyle, kind of made me or helped me become more creative as I become more present and as I shed more of my own expectations and assumptions. And I'm going to be 71, and I'll tell you, you hit your 70s, you got a lot of expectations and assumptions to let go of.
Really? Yes. So I would hope that by then we were smarter in not having so many expectations, but...
Well, I don't know. I mean, getting into what, you know, whatever, there is, you know, there's a social... like we talk about the collective unconscious, that also involves what it means to get older. And so you have to get through all that stuff too. I'm watching the time, and I'd really like to get onto the story of how I happened to decide to call this session with you the New Year of the Tree, because it is quite fascinating, and it does follow my own opportunity to be quite an intuitive person and involved in that kind of synchronicity of how I came upon discovering the New Year of the Tree.
I would love to let you tell us about that and also about your ebook on Amazon, The Tale of the Heart Tree.
That came out of this story, and that's a lovely it says it's for children, but it's one of those kind of picture storybooks that is very much for adults and for children. There are many of those kinds of books around that are actually used as PhD structures that you see the depths of those stories. So I recommend it to adults as well. And, yeah, The Tale of the Heart Tree, it's on Amazon.com. And if you put my name in, you'll discover it. They only accept a Word doc when you do an ebook with them. So we put together a much more beautiful PDF file where I did the illustrations as well, and somebody else helped me with the digital. And the PDF file is just gorgeous, and it has the text on top of the illustrations, which was not possible to translate into the ebook. So if people want a better form, they have to contact me directly. But they can look it up and see what they feel about it. Anyway, the story around the New Year of the Tree. I lived 26 years in Europe, between my late 30s and almost to 60. And it was in the 90s, the early 90s, I was coming over to the States for doing more professional work and also to take a break and have a holiday and see friends and stuff. And, of course, I would go back to Oregon because I was in private practice there in the late 70s, and I mean in the mid to late 70s in Ashland. And Ashland's just amazing culturally, and one of the best things about it, especially at that time, was the incredible secondhand bookstores. So I went browsing in these bookstores, and I went into one, and I was just drawn to this one book called The Seasons of Our Joy by a wonderful man, Wasow, W-A-S-K-O-W. It's a 1982 book I'm sure it's out of date, but if people are interested, they can research it. Love the picture on the front of a motif of a tree and the sun and the moon. And I realized that I've always been drawn to trees, and it goes back to my childhood in Pennsylvania. I was brought up in a small town called Media, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia, which in those days, in the 40s and 50s, was like 100 miles away from the big city. And in the 40s and 50s, I was brought up, I'm Jewish, I was brought up in a Jewish household, a more of a secular Jewish household, but definitely Jewish. And it was the time of the birth of Israel in Palestine, Israel-Palestine. And at that time, the young nation was very drawn to a young movement called the Arbor Day Foundation in the United States. And they knew one of the ways to really make their land healthy was to plant trees. So they started this whole movement and campaign. And so everybody outside of Israel that was Jewish got involved in this campaign. And consequently, when I was born, there were trees planted in my name in Israel. When I turned 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up, there were trees planted in my name in Israel. And I knew all about this. And it's also happens to discover, and I remembered recently, that some of this campaign would happen especially in midwinter on the New Year of the Tree. But I didn't remember that until I started to research all of this and found this book. So anyway, there I am. I see this book. I open it up. I find a chapter called The New Year of the Tree. I'm very intrigued. I take it back to Portugal, and I'm just with it for a while, and then I live in an amazing place in Portugal. I live in a village which is part of the side of a national forest. And after having this book for a while and being aware of this New Year of the Tree, I am working as a special school counselor. I created the program in an international school. And I'm in private practice as a therapist. And I convinced the school and a colleague to start a tree planting project with the National Forest Department in the area where we lived. So already this information started to impact my life. And we did this tree project the whole time I lived there up in the mountains. And then years later, when I came back to the States and in Charlotte about 10 years ago, I was approached by, as a creative consultant, to do one of my other creative festivals. I've always been into incorporating celebrations in my work. And I did my traveling autumn celebration, which I've done for about the last 10 years between Charlotte and Pennsylvania and Portugal. And so many years ago, they asked me if I would come up with something that would incorporate midwinter, Valentine's, and going into the spring to be a kind of inspiration for their young students, because they wanted to have an art festival up in Noda in early spring. But they wanted to come out of the inspiration of being engaged with the wintertime and these other festivals. So I sat down and I thought about and I reread The New Year of the Tree. And the festival started The New Year of the Tree, kind of obscure, thousands of years ago during the time of the first temple in Israel. And it came about because they wanted to fix a date to tithe to their community, because in those days they didn't have money like we have today to pay taxes and stuff like that. So the way they tithed was what they grew, and one of the things they grew was fruit trees. So they wanted to come up with a specific date that they felt they could say anything after this date that came off those trees, the first that came off would be their tithing. So they came up with midwinter. They came up with a time in which in that part of the world all the heavy rains of winter would have soaked into the roots and nourished the roots and made the earth pliable for the nutrients that were in the earth. And then the first sign of all that richness coming from the roots would start to bring the sap up into the trunk of the tree. And that's when they decided it was the new year of the tree. Now, this follows a full moon, so it's always changes a bit. And this year, we just had it about a week ago on February 4th. And so that was the time in which was the first inkling of signs of new life with all its nourishment from the roots that would sustain the new blossoming forth of life in the spring. So that was the first kind of reason that they started the New Year of the Tree. Now, hundreds of years later, a more mystical interpretation came in, and then recently, which I found fascinating and getting ready for your show today, I remembered this, was in the 1970s, early 1970s, late 1960s, there was a whole group of people, and a specific group of Jewish people, that were very against the Vietnam War. And they knew that in one of the holy books of Judaism, which is the Torah, it actually states that if you're going to create war on a country or a city, you must protect the trees. And at that time, one of the military actions of our country was deforestation of all the Vietnam forests. So this group of young Jewish people created a campaign to reforestate Vietnam as an action of peace. And often, throughout those years of the Vietnam War, they did it on the New Year of the Tree. And actually, there are trees planted on the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., that were planted at this time and in connection to the New Year of the Tree in their peaceful way, saying, this is not right. So that's another part of the fascination of how this little festival changed over the years. And the mystical part that came out around the 16th century was a part of Judaism that was involved with a book called the Kabbalah, as some of you might know, but it came out of mystical Judaism. And it talks more about the tree of life as kind of the essence of what life is, and that one of the expressions of in Judaism, what is God, is the tree. Now, in the Old Testament, you have the Garden of Eden, and you have the Tree of Life. And as a young girl, I received a charm, like many young Jewish girls in the 40s and 50s, of a Tree of Life. So all these things really have come out of this little festival that I never even knew about until I found this book. So this has influenced me in writing The Tale of the Heart Tree, which, of course, I wrote in midwinter in the New Year of the Tree, and the story incorporates all that. And of course, over the years, when I was doing this autumn celebration back in 2011, the United Nations had an International Year of the Forest, and they invited me to incorporate my International Traveling Autumn Celebration with their event. So we were on their website in 2011, and we incorporated tree planting along with our creative celebration. And part of that celebration included individuals who were in activities in the different places in Charlotte and in Pennsylvania and in several places in Portugal, in which I incorporated this evolving creative tree process. So I hope that says a good deal about when we look at the New Year of the Tree, it's really a renewal of, at the most cold part of the year, which we are experiencing here in Charlotte, some of the coldest weather in all the years I've been here, which is the most vulnerable time of year for life. And so that sap starting to rise symbolically from the tree is that clinging on and that knowing that life will sustain itself and that life will, of course, blossom forth as everybody loves spring. So my story around the new year of the tree.
And this tree concept that you have developed, you have also incorporated to the transpersonal approach and perspective to life. Is this what you're going to talk about when you share your exercise?
Yes, the transpersonal approach, because it is holistic and integrated, it in itself is saying when you're whole, when you're integrated, you're very present, and you become that creativity, which is basically your consciousness. Your consciousness is the ability to really be the essence of all of life. You know that, like, very well-known writers will tell you about, some of them will go riding in a car, or someone will just take long walks. But when they find that they're in the rhythm of being in the present, their intuition and their creativity just opens up. It's just all present. Because when you're totally present, all your capabilities are present. So the transpersonal is assisting you to integrate. And often, this is a touchy area, because a lot of times when different forms of health and therapeutic approaches become popularized and in the mainstream of society, there's bits and pieces of it that get taken out that maybe people aren't that comfortable with, and the other bits and pieces stay, and then that becomes the new mantra. And what I've discovered is everything has to be positive. And in terms of a lot of ways in which people talk about health these days, but in the transpersonal approach, everything has to be everything. And it's our own critical nature, our own judgments that make some of the parts of who we are not acceptable. And that's what integration is about. It is to see that ultimately all of who we are is extremely important and makes the richness of who we are, you know. So absolutely, this creative tool of the creative tree process is an expression of holistic and transpersonal approaches.
Now, Stella, explain me something. You are telling us that we should be creative, and to be creative, we have to be in the moment and to respond to events or to things that happen, you know, and not to react. Is this something we all have as an innate ability to do, or is it something we have to
do? Oh, yes, I mean, of course, because if you break it down like Dr. Larry Dossey did and said creativity is the ability to see and to respond, yes, we all have the ability to do that. It's not to say it's not easy, because a lot of different ideas and thoughts and feelings will appear that sometimes distorts what we're experiencing. But we all have the ability to do that. And usually, you're much younger than me, but it seems to be a renaissance right now, at least on my emails, at least what's coming to me. But dear old Alan Watts has resurfaced, and he comes up on loads of sites. He's all over the YouTube. When Alan Watts was part of this whole movement in the 70s, he was a philosopher, and he actually is credited to bringing a Zen Buddhism to the Western world, especially he lived in the Bay Area around the same time I was there. And he was the main influencer, and he wrote loads of books. And he seems his ideas and thoughts are coming back again. They're just all over. I'm constantly getting parts and bits of it. But he basically talks about exactly what I'm talking about. And that we are the essence of life. I mean, now when I look at myself, I don't even call myself a spiritual person anymore. I feel like I'm just part of that whole mystery of life. And the more I allow myself to just be that way, that creative aspect of ourselves is there. I think the word creative has gotten really battered, almost like love and lots of other words in our culture. It's not at all the way we think of creativity, which is why I quoted Dr. Dossey and his whole chapter on creativity. It has really nothing to do with making pretty pictures. It really has to do with being in tune and present with yourself and know that you are part of this whole universe, and what you need in that moment will surface. I'm not saying this happens all the time, because some people will call that enlightenment or some people will call that something else, but that's basically what we are capable of. And one of the questions that I had jotted down was when we talked about what made me move into this creative tools approach, or how it kind of evolved that after 40 years, a lot of my time is focused on that. And I truly believe that my life and the work I have done has allowed me to become much more, have much more access to my own creativity. And getting out of my own way of what is creative has helped do that. And at the same time, it's what I mentioned, that it's not what we think creativity is. Creativity is much more to do with having the ability to see and respond and then you'd be fascinated. Some of the people who worked with me over the years were terrified of what they call creativity or art. And over the years they work with me, they relax. And because it became not work, it became fun and play. And if you watch children, they are the most present. Unfortunately, children are being shoved into doing and being doing a lot and not getting to be present as much. But if you look at young children, they are very, very present. And they don't have any problems being creative.
No, they don't.
As a matter of fact, one of the things that more of a how can I say, counselor might say to somebody who's depressed, one of the things they say, and you can see this on sites, on different websites or stuff like that about depression, they will tell you to be around children. Mm-hmm. Because children know how to be present, and they engage in play. And they engage in play seriously, as if it was their work, but they do it as play. And that's the whole thing. And even Alan Watts, I did write down somewhere about Alan Watts' quote that I really liked the other day, and I'll see if I can locate it. He says, to being completely engaged in what you are doing here and now, instead of seeing that or calling that work, realize that it is play. So I hope that, you know, I hope that gives a flavor to the direction I take. Because you can't pin me down, because if you come to any of my groups, people will not know what I'm going to do that evening. And that keeps them engaged and very present. And then there's the other magic of being in community anyway that shifts you from thinking you're an isolated human being and puts you into a perspective of this interconnectedness to everything. And that shifts you into being into the present much more easily too.
You know what I'm sure that our listeners would love to know is you mentioned some of your tools, but can you explain us again or mention some of those creative tools that people might find if they are working?
Okay,
with
well, they would have to contact me. They could see a couple of them on my website, but they'd have to contact me if they wanted them. One of them I created about 6 or 7 years ago called the Aware Self. It's a process that I developed, which is also quite fun. It involves being on the floor and having so many objects, and you work with these objects as a way to discover whatever it is you're focused on or your question at that time. It's kind of like it came to me as my way of playing with divination in a more playful, fun way. And that's called the Aware Self. And then there's another booklet I created called the Raisin Prayer Game, and that basically developed from a festival in Portugal at New Year's. And I'm not into New Year's resolutions. There's all kinds of judgment and restriction for a lot of people around that. But this came out of something that the Portuguese do at right before midnight when the bells start to ring and stuff like that. If you're at a party and you're at the beach, which is most of Portugal is the beach, you would be handed 12 raisins. And as the time ticks off before midnight, everybody's eating one at a time. And I remember when I went to my first party in which this took place, I asked what was going on. And they said, and of course, you know, in Portugal, they, like in Italy, they raise a lot of grapes, and so they have a lot of raisins. They grow a lot of grapes. They have a lot of raisins. And they said, well, every time you eat one at the tone of the bells ringing, which is for each month of the coming year, for your health. And I thought that was very fun. And so I guess that stuck in my consciousness, and sometime later I came up with this game, which didn't have to be at New Year's, but it was a game, and it did engage your hands. And often when you engage other parts of your body, you get out of your head, and you're more engaged with all of you. And so basically the Raisin Prayer game is I get like 12 different colors of tissue paper, or I put designs on the tissue paper so you know one from the other one. You get a piece of paper, and you have at least 12 juicy raisins, hopefully organic. And you just take a time. If you're going to do it for New Year's, you might do it at a party. We often do it in our group. And you allow yourself to be present and come up with 12 things you want to allow in your life, not that you have to do. Actually, Wayne Dyer finally talked a lot about that because he was very much into intentions, and I was always into allowing. And I felt that was, and he finally incorporated in one of his books the term allowing. So you allow, you open to 12 things, and you write them down on the piece of paper, and the little note paper, and then you just take one raisin and put it in one of the little pieces of tissue paper and allow that raisin to stand for one of those 12 things. And then you make sure you write down, okay, I put that into the pink tissue paper. So when you're finished, you have a little bag with 12 raisins in different color or designed tissues. And on the first day of each month of the year, you just stick your hand in there and you see which one comes out, which is also fun. And then you just be, when you open it up, you see what you wrote. And you just be with that for the month. I have a little altar. I put mine on there. and you just be with how that is influencing you during that month. So I find it very fun, and I remind the group when it's the first of the month. So that's another one of my creative tools that I have put into a booklet format. So those are a couple of them off the top of my head that actually aren't booklets.
And you know, I cannot think of a better way even to remember what is it that you wanted. Because many times when we think of those intentions or those things that we want to be open to, we just say it, but we don't really even remember them. So our intentions are not that strong.
So if you play at something like this, and here you are at a party, and you've got to find 12 raisins and tissue paper, all of a sudden your whole focus shifts. You're more relaxed, and you're more open to the fun of it. And once again, that brings you more present, and then all of a sudden you will discover that you will be writing down things that, And so my work has always been, even when it's serious, it's playful. That element's been there. That could have also been influenced that I was, before I went back and got trained in partially in university, mostly outside of the university because this was just a movement then. And then through the next 20 years of my life, I was taking courses all over the world. But I was at first a teacher of very young children. So I knew how to be engaged in play. And I'm certain that has influenced my work.
I'm sure it does. So,
and you know, I'm also looking at the time, and we wanted to see if we could do this game, we could do this creative tool with our listeners. You haven't had anybody feel they want to come on and ask a question, so maybe we could take this time to see if we can do this.
So we can take the time to do that. So I'm going to just let people, if you don't have it with you, just pause this interview right now if you're listening in on demand. Go for some paper. Go for color pencils, crayons, whatever it is that you want to work with, and then come back to this. And whenever you're ready still, we are ready for the exercise.
Okay, so once again, this has become the Creative Tree Process. And you can do this any time of year, yet it's really fun to tune in to the fact that we are in midwinter. This new year of the tree has just taken place, and the sap is beginning to rise in the trees. And so this sense of this sustaining life and new life that is reaching towards life and renewing life again in this coldest part of the year is actually the vibration that is happening if you're in this part of the world and not in South America or in Central America or in Africa. So if you're at this time of year, it's even, like I said, we can do this activity at any time. But this is a really vibrational, wonderful time of year to be engaged in honoring the tree and honoring symbolically us as a vibrant tree of life. And so I'm going to suggest that you either do one of two things with your body. If you're sitting, you sit up nice and straight and your feet are flat on the floor so that your soles of your feet become the roots as if you are a tree. And if you would prefer, you can actually stand and relax in your body because you're not going to deal with the paper until the end and allow yourself to actually stand and be that rooted being of the tree. And you're going to engage your breathing so that all you're doing is either sitting with your feet flat on the floor or standing in a comfortable posture. and you're just breathing, and this is all you're doing. And as you breathe, you're allowing yourself and your imagination, and if you and your imagination may come through on a visual way, and not to worry if you're not a visual person in terms of imagery, you can just think yourself doing this, and that is fine as well. So here you are, breathing, either sitting or standing, feeling the soles of your feet on the floor, and you're allowing yourself to be the symbol of the tree of life, which you are. And all parts of your body are representations, like our lungs, all like branches, and our capillaries. So as you breathe, you allow yourself to be this vibrant, alive tree of life. And you breathe into those roots, knowing that it is winter, and the rains of winter have nourished and replenished all that your roots need. And as you breathe and you feel the nourishment and you feel the strength of your roots, you know what you are rooted in. And what you are rooted in is full of life and health for all of you. So as you breathe and you feel those roots and the richness of the rains and the replenishment of life to those roots and the nourishment, you can begin to feel in this depth of winter this promise, as the juices and the nourishment of life reaches up through those roots into the rest of you. And it brings with it all that you know that you are rooted in. It brings up into your body as the trunk of your life, into allowing that richness to reach forward and to reach in all parts of you, the vibrant, symbolic tree of life. And as you do, you know that life is sustaining and that you flow into life and that you say yes to life. And in doing that, your presence is totally there. And you can experience, and you are experiencing, how that you, this vibrant tree, is reaching up and saying yes to the flow of life. And you are doing that now. And as you breathe, you are doing that now. You know what you are rooted in, and you have allowed that rootedness, that richness of your roots, to reach up into the rest of you as we reach towards the new life that, of course, will blossom forth in the spring, and for now is nourishing and flowing through us so that that can take place. And as you do, and as you breathe, you can see this tree unfolding. And as you are rooted below, you're also rooted in all aspects of yourself, in all areas. You may call it your meaning to life, your spiritual part of your life, all aspects of that symbol of the tree are being nourished and flowing as we flow and say yes into life. So when you're ready, if you're standing, you can sit back down. And when you're ready, you slowly will open your eyes and you will allow yourself to express your experience in doing this with your pencils, your crayons, your colored pencils, your pastels, and allowing that tree of life that you are and that rootedness and knowing what you're rooted in and how that sustains all of life and allows life to flow, you're now expressing that in whatever form it takes. It might take a form of a tree, it might take a form of words, it might take a form of other images, but you're allowing yourself to do that now. And we're going to give you a few moments before we make any other comments. And one thing Claudia did say is that if you wanted to share what your experience was, you can always email me or contact me. And if you're in the Charlotte area, you can always also telephone me. And you're more than welcome to contact me about my groups and my individual work. But for now, just take a few moments and let that experience come out in whatever way on the paper.
I am a very visual person still.
Very what?
Visual.
Okay.
So when I was doing this experience with you, of course I would see a tree. I have always been fascinated by tree. But the part that I love is that this tree has this very, very wide trunk. And it feels like it's strong, because it's taking all of the nutrients and everything that it's needed, because the moist and the earth is so rich right now because of what you said, that the rains and the snow is melting and it's nourishing the earth, so the trees are sapping up all of that. So the trunk, it feels invigorating.
Did you get a sense when I said, let yourself know all that you are rooted in and what kinds of, like, I know, because I do this exercise myself, and I'm visual but also very into words. a lot of specific words come up for me when I consider what it is I'm rooted in.
There's a lot of minerals in there, and there's a lot of like I said, nutrients, but also the strength. There's this powerful strength of the roots that is going down the earth all the way to where, like there's no barriers, kind of thing.
Yes, there's a lot of trees, you know. Because I have lots of books on trees that have roots that go forever. It's quite amazing. And I have a lot of pictures of trees from around the world, too. So so the words strength and power were and nourished were quite important to you, because those are
yes.
the ones you mentioned, you know. But it's quite interesting if we give ourselves time to allow ourselves to be in that experience, because when you do a kind of guided imagery, and as people know about consciousness has no limits. It's not local. So we can talk on the phone this way and be in this interview and be totally connected, even though we are physically separated. So we can all have this experience because consciousness knows no bounds. So we have the opportunity to really experience for ourselves what are some of those key words. Like I said, I'm a word person. Other people could just be a visual person, or it could be trigger off some memory or something else, you know, in their life in which trees are very important.
Yeah, and the feeling, that feeling of being, well, probably the word would be present still. It was the present feeling, and that I even could feel the branches coming out of my hands. So it was quite interesting.
Yes, I'm really glad. I think that's the first time I've done a radio transmitted guidance like that, so that was very fun. Well, I think we've said just about everything. I'm not sure if I did mention, the Wisdom Connecting Session, right? Because that was a new thing that I started about a year ago. I did mention that activity that I was doing with people individually, right?
And that is, you're having any sessions or group therapies right now or in this month?
Well, actually, we have a group this evening.
Oh,
it just so happens that today, this evening is group day. I would need people to contact me because we have a wonderful space, but it's a limited space, and we have a plethora of fun things to work with. And like I said, group is always different. And it's always on a Monday, the one that I'm doing now. But if people are interested in group and there's enough people, I always start another one, and it can be on another day. It's not a problem. But I've been doing ongoing groups for over 40 years in England and in Portugal and in the United States for the last 10. Yeah. So that's what's ongoing right now. And there's no other particular event that I'm doing at this time.
That's fine. So we can contact you at 704-535-7395 or
that's
your
correct.
email etspike@gmail.com. Well,
that's
Steph,
correct.
I am so grateful that you chose to come to Charlotteville and to share this experience with the world. And I welcome you to come back as soon as you want to. How long are you going to be in Charlotte?
Oh, I don't know. I usually go to Portugal the last year is like once a year. Normally it's in the autumn. I don't know if I will make a trip this spring or not. And most of those years it was with the autumn celebration. But now I've kind of shifted that to just doing an autumn special tree planting ceremonies. I have been doing those tree planting ceremonies in Charlotte at Independence Regional Library. We've planted in the last 4 years trees there that had been wonderfully donated from lots of different places, but in the last few years recently from a local nursery. I mean, just gigantic, wonderful oak trees from Banner's Nursery over here on Monroe Road. We will continue to do that. We're not sure we're going to do it at the library, but we will have another space to do that. But that's often in the fall. But usually in the springtime, we do have a blossoming ceremony because we go back to the trees because some of them, they're first year, and we see with our fingers crossed that they have blossomed into the spring. We actually have two places. One is out at Lake Wiley. We've done it on private land as well as the library. And people are always welcome. That's usually sometime in May to be a part of that ceremony. It is an interactive ceremony. It is fun. So that's another way to meet me, but that's not till the spring. So you have the opportunity to work with me individually. You might be interested in the Wisdom Connecting Sessions or our group, our Creative Circle group. So feel free to contact me. And I've enjoyed this very much. Like I said, I used to have my own radio show when I was in practice in Ashland, Oregon, on FM radio at the university. And so it was really fun to do it again. And I'd love to come back anytime.
Please just contact us, and thank you everyone that has taken the time to listen to us, and I will let everyone know when we have Stel back, and remember, you can follow us, both of us, on Facebook. If you want to like Stel, her page is Stel T Spike, M-A-E-C-T-P. And or ours, Charlotteville Internet Radio. Like us, follow us, and always be in touch. Thank you.
Now, Claudia, I did want to add that because there were people who wanted to tune in from Europe, actually, and they're 5 hours later. So I said if they went on at 5 o'clock, it would be noon here. But if they missed it, all they have to do is to go to charlotteview.net and they'll find the show archived, right?
Yes, they do. Or just all the postings that we have been doing so far, the same link will be forever. So if you have sent them the link to listen live, it's the same link for on demand. So they can just go to Charlotteview, your page, and click on the image and go directly to the interview.
Very good. Very good. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. Thank you, Stella, again. Have a fantastic week. And let us know all your happenings. And when you do those ceremonies, we would love to share them with
you. Oh, I certainly will, Claudia. I'd love you to be there.
Thank you, Stella. So have again for your time, for everything. So we're going to say goodbye with a song by Carson Hill, Beautiful Heart.